then you will get no hurt, mister. No, no, no. I said, yeah.
I said, yeah.
And connection on this Wednesday evening. I'm coming to you live from and connection. Sister Monica, are you there?
Yes, hello?
All right. Dr. Alton, are you there? Yes, I
yes,
can
I
hear
am here. Good evening, everyone.
We say, this is the Clarendon Connection, and we're coming to you live from the foot of the Bullet Mountain in a district called Turtle Pond. Clarendon happens to be the center of the island of Jamaica. And truly, we, our national anthem say, Eternal Father, bless our land. Guard us with thy mighty hand. Keep us free from evil powers. Be our light through countless hours. To a leader's great defender, grant you wisdom from above. Justice should be ours forever. Jamaica, land we love. Wherever you are, continue to trust in the true and living God. We exalt his name every day. And truly we have been experiencing the blessing of the King of Glory. And we see where our island, over 643 people has recovered from this coronavirus. And to date, we only have 10 deaths from a total number of 762. And we truly are giving God praise for his blessing and his mercy. Because we know it is him why these figures are so low. So wherever you are this evening, we thank you for tuning in to the Clarendon Connection. As I mentioned before, my two guests this evening are Monique Johnson. I would call her a Jamaican Canadian. She was born in Canada, but she has traveled a lot of places all over the world, and she will be telling us about them in a while. And also my other guest is Dr. Gregory Orton. And we truly are giving God thanks for him. He's an Olympian. 3 medals under his belt. So he has been there, done that. I know he wants to give back to the youth. But we're first going to invite Monique Johnson on the line to tell us a little about yourself, Monique, and what you have done.
Hello, viewers. Hi, Uncle Ann and all the viewers out there. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I do acting and modeling in Canada, as well as I went to school for accounting. So that is my background. What else would you like me to elaborate about my traveling? Can I tell you about my traveling?
I have seen a part of your resume, and you have done a lot of traveling. You know, so tell us about some of the places that you have been to. Tell us about Canada first. Where and where in Canada have you been? Because Canada is a large place, it has 9 provinces. But tell me where and where you have been to in Canada. And what are some of the things that you have done in Canada also?
I've been to Calgary, where there's Banff. There's a place called Banff that's near the mountains in Calgary. It's close to St. Louis Lake. I've been to Winnipeg. I've done a road trip twice to Alberta. The first time was to visit my aunt, and then the second time I went for Calgary Comic Con. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's a trade show that has to do with comic books, movies, TV shows. So we went out there the second time. I went out with my fiance, Mark Williams, and we went to go sell some merchandise since he has a company called Heroes of the World, so it's superheroes from every country. Wherever you're from, there's a superhero. So we ended up going to through all those places, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Calgary, Thunder Bay. Where else can we say? Haven't been to Nova Scotia yet, but that is on my bucket list. My plan was to complete the whole of Canada, but since this corona has happened, it's kind of on hold for a wee second. As well as I've been to Iceland. It was a great experience out there. Visiting the waters that has the springs. So they have springs in Iceland. We went out there and ate their cuisine as well, Iceland cuisine, as well as we went out to the UK. I visited London. I was able to see
Tell me something more about Iceland before you actually get into UK. And you talk about the cuisine. What are stuff of interest of you? What are the you have seen in Iceland? Give us an idea of what.
Going to Iceland, I had a very good experience being a black person traveling. Sometimes you don't hear a lot about black people that travel to other countries other than like your native land of where you're from or your heritage.
Right.
So going to Iceland, we had a very good experience. I I just felt like I was at home in Toronto. It didn't feel any different. They didn't treat us any differently. They were very friendly to us. I had a very good experience. I would recommend people visit Iceland.
So in your traveling, like going to Iceland and stuff like that, you're saying that the people were appreciative of people of color.
Yes, they were. I didn't feel any racism when I was there. It's not to say that it's not there, but I didn't experience it when I went there.
Tell us about your trip to Puerto Rico.
Oh, Puerto Rico. Okay, so my experience to Puerto Rico, it was actually very great because there seems to be a Jamaican community there. So going there, I was able to have corrigo, oxtail, like the normal cuisines you get in Jamaica as well as you can get them in Canada. But I was able to experience it there, and I was actually surprised. I didn't know that we had a Jamaican community in Puerto Rico. And the people there were inviting as well, even though we didn't speak the language. We didn't speak Portuguese. We didn't speak the language there. Well, they actually speak Spanish. We weren't able to speak the native tongue, but we were still able to get around, even though not knowing how to speak the language. And they were very inviting to us as well.
So you, in your trek to Iceland and Puerto Rico and stuff, you're saying that people are very accommodative of people of color. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they were very accommodating to us, very inviting.
So in no way at all you felt intimidated of being a person, being a black person then?
Well, in Iceland, I can say, like, when we interacted with a cashier, she was a lady, and she was more inviting to my fiance Mark Williams than she was to me. It was like, it's like she would rather speak to him, the guy, than speak to me. I felt that was kind of sexist in a way. That's the only thing I can say, because I think that they're very family oriented people, but I feel like the women there always look to men. So even to pay the bill, everything. That's what I can say for myself, my own experience going to Iceland.
So how long have you been doing all of these traveling, and what is the ultimate goal from all of these? And tell me some of the places that, you know, that is not on your bucket list, that you really want to go.
Places that I really want to go to?
Yeah.
I want to go to Africa. That's on my bucket list. I want to do that this year. I want to do it before December, as long as everything goes back to somewhat normal, that I can be able to travel out to Africa. Because I was supposed to go in January of this year, but then I ended up going to Costa Rica, and I ended up going to Azores. So I'm just trying to travel. Like, I think the traveling bug has been in me since I was a child, because my mom did make us, we did go traveling a lot. We used to go to New York, Niagara, Montreal, like different places, as a child, and I just feel like it's still embedded in me as an adult, and I still want to explore, go around, meet new people, see new cultures, and just experience people's traditions other than my own.
But in the world that we are living in today, and we got to be realistic, a world that is polarized with racism and stuff. Don't you feel a little intimidated to be going to all of these places based on the color of your skin?
Well, before the pandemic, I didn't feel any way about it. Like, before this whole thing about George Floyd getting murdered and all this police injustice, this has been happening for years. This is just bringing it to the forefront right now. And now I'm a little bit more skeptical about traveling now. But I feel like it is my right to do it. I can't be staying in my house, for instance, for my own justice concerning being a black female. So I feel like I still have the right to travel. So I'm still going to do it.
All right. Tell me about your experience in New York.
New York City?
I found
the people were kind of, I found they were not too nice. Like, you can't ask them directions. They have places to go and people to see, So, like, don't waste them time. Don't waste their time. I found my own experience, not to speak for other people, but that's what I felt when I went there. And I've been to New York like 20 times. By the time I kept on going year after year, several years, then I already knew where I had to go. So I didn't really have to ask people questions. Like, I found the first time when I went there when I was 18, and my mom sent us on a bus trip. Me and my sister went. And I just felt that when we were there for the first time, even the police officers, you ask them questions, they're reluctant to help you. So I didn't feel any racism there. There's a big community of Jamaicans as well, you know, Queens, Jamaica, in New York. So, no, I didn't experience any racism. It's not to say that it's not there, but racism is everywhere, right? It's just how do you deal with it.
How do you find it in Canada, though? What is your experience living in, born in Canada and living there?
I find in Canada, it's very, like, it's hidden. It's like, you know, carbon dioxide, how carbon dioxide can kill you, but you cannot see it. And it's like that. It's like hidden, but it's there. You know, you're exposed to it. It's like, you know, carbon dioxide can kill you, but you can't see it. But it's there. Mm-hmm. That's how it is mm-hmm. in Toronto, I can say. Like, it's hidden, but you know what? It happens to people. I've experienced it myself. Like, numerous times I've experienced it with my fiance. Like, him being stopped for no reason. The police doesn't even know what he's saying when he's stopping him. Or, I just saw your white car sticking out. Or just, like, random things that don't make any sense. And there's other people speeding past him, and he just stops him.
So, when you're treated this way, does it make you be afraid or do you just want to say, I want to go more and do more things and just prove to them that this thing is not right?
I feel that we need to start embracing, I like traveling and everything, but I feel like we still need to take care of what's happening in where we're from. So, like, I'm from Canada. We need to take care of the issues that are happening here, you know, because there is a lot of issues. They're just very hidden. And now, since this situation with the black rights and injustice, brutality, I feel that now it's coming more to the forefront that people are speaking up. I even went to the protests that we have here. I've gone to them. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to stand up for this, because if we're going to have children, we need it to be better for them, for our legacy, for our next generation. So we need to really look at this. And I feel, too, we need to know the root of where we came from, like our true root, like where we came from before all this slavery. I find that a lot of us don't know our past, our true past. So I feel like if we're going to embrace this and we're going to get change, even the laws need to be changed for all this to happen too as well. And I find group economics, we need to implement that more into our community. Because I feel like, yeah, we do have the churches, we do have the barbershop, we do have the hair salons, we do have funeral homes. But what else do we have? You know what I mean?
But you have been through the school systems. Would you say that enough has been taught in the school so that our people can be educated about, like, about our roots or what?
No, not at all. Like, half of the time when I was in high school, I was like, I was questioning the teacher, like, why do I need to learn this? Where is it going to come up in my life? Where am I going to use it? And he would just babble. He couldn't give me a clear response. There was no response. And I felt that what we learned, really, now we can see, like, concerning some of the stuff that we did learn, they touched on the indigenous people, but not as much. And now we're learning more about what really happened. And I just feel that all the stuff that we are learning, it's mostly the white supremacy or the white history. It's not the black history. And like before,
Like you have gone through the school system in Canada, so you haven't learned much about like a Marcus Garvey or even a Martin Luther or a Nelson Mandela.
I had to learn it myself. Like, I had to touch it. Like, we do have Black History Month. Don't get me wrong. That's February, and like mm-hmm. I did learn about it myself, researching it myself. I don't really remember learning it in school. But through my own research and reading and watching documentaries and watching movies, I'm able to get back to my roots myself. But I find that they should implement it into the schools more. We need to know where we came from, right? We need to know our history.
So,
we need to see ourselves painted in a good light.
So like how we in Jamaica, we have been indoctrinated with this Christopher Columbus. Was that the same way you were indoctrinated in Canada about Christopher Columbus?
Yes, yes. They missed out a lot of stuff. Because he did, all the stuff he said he discovered, people were already at those places. So he didn't discover them. People were already there. So they already, those places had already been discovered. It's just they're saying they, when you're looking at the, I guess, the white doctrine or whatever you want to call it, you see that they look at him as like a savior or somebody that saves people. But really, he didn't save people. Oh, there was a lot of genocide. If you actually look at the history and the slavery and considering black people and even the indigenous people, what they went through, how they were moved off their land. Like if it was discovered, then why were there already people living on the land? That's the part that doesn't make sense.
I want to discover. Because something happened in 1988, and I want to bring in Dr. Orton on this point. Something happened in 1988 at the Seoul Olympics, and hear me out. At the Seoul Olympics, uh-huh. There was a guy there by the name of Ben Johnson. I don't know if you heard of him, but Ben Johnson won the 100 meters. But then as he won it, and he was tested positive for steroids. It was at that point that we heard that he's a Jamaican. When he represented in the Olympics, he represented Canada. But after he won and he was tested for anabolic steroids in 1988 at the Seoul Olympics, then the world knew that it is not a Canadian anymore. It is Jamaican Ben Johnson. Dr. Orton, you must have heard about this incident. Do you want to elaborate some more on it as we go into this aspect of the program?
Well, what I can say is that, you know, in most cases, people will accept the individual of African descent when they are doing great things. But if that person stumble along the way, then they will look for the original root of the person. And there are many reasons why people would do something like that. At the end of the day, it is important that, and this is one of the reasons why I am really passionate about what I do, because I see where you can lead young people along the way, the wrong way, by not educating them on their history. Now, one of the things, those people who know Ben Johnson knows that he embraces his culture, his Jamaican roots. However, because of marketability and et cetera, I think he felt it was best to capitalize on the fact that being Canadian do come with that white privilege, or I should say do come with the privilege. And I think because of that reason, he took the chance, you know, just like even Donovan Bailey, and they associated themselves with being Canadian. But I can tell you that I know both individuals, and they embrace the Jamaican roots dearly. So this is important to note, though, that every black child, whether you're in Canada, Africa, it is always important to know your history. And just like most people, I have to educate myself on black history, and from black history, it went into wanting to know more about my even national hero. So it is important that wherever you are, as long as you're African descent, that you must live your history and you must embrace your history. Even if others will exploit who you are, you know, you still want to make sure that you're totally connected to your roots.
Because what I'm saying, when the Olympics started out, and you know they come down to the 100 meter, Ben Johnson was introduced as a Canadian. At that point in he was introduced as a Canadian. No, when the race was over and he won, that was one of the fastest tests I have ever seen in Olympics. By minutes after we hear that, whoa, Ben Johnson has been tested positive for anabolic steroids. And immediately, that's when I know that Ben Johnson was a Jamaican. That's what I'm telling you. That's when I know that Ben Johnson was a Jamaican.
Okay.
So I am saying, I am saying it is important that, you know, these people know, and because we have, our history has not been taught, it keeps on affecting us. And going back to when Donovan Bailey won, I the Canadian government, you know what they do? His picture was plastered over the Air Canada airline. I have seen that, and I remember Donovan Bailey when he won. The first thing he said, "I am a Jamaican," you know. Mm-hmm. So our history need to be taught to these things. And what would be good if you could look at ways, as Monica says, she has known so much about Columbus. And it's the same thing in Jamaica. We were indoctrinated by Columbus, who is a liar. And there are ways we got to now find to re-indoctrinate these people about our true history. Monique is going back to Africa, so I hope she goes back to Ghana, you know, and we are most of the African slaves came from and came to the West Indies. And she can go back and go back to our roots and because our names are not African names. Our names are based on our land owners who were Scottish men. So a name like Cameron is a Scottish name. So you know that our slave owners were Scottish people. So all of those things that we need to go back to, because we got to go back to our roots, and that is what we need to even start educating people on, because this is one of the premises on which this program was founded. We want to go back to our roots and educate our people, because listen to what the Bible said. The Bible said, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." Mm-hmm. And we are in a phobia where people say, "Oh, what you don't know won't hurt you." No, look out. If you were watching the cricket the other day, Michael Olin, one of the greatest West Indian bowler, the Jamaican, he was talking to Sky Sports, and the man was crying like a baby. Why? Because he have experienced racism, and when 4 days was over. And Michael Olin was talking to Sky Sports again. The man was still crying because it hurt so much. No, we don't know. I never knew that Michael Olin was going through all that. I never knew that he had experienced all of that. And now that he's talking about it. And I'm sure there are a lot of more sportsmen, great sportsman. I remember watching Usain Bolt talking to Ian Bowen, and when he was telling him about the racism that he has experienced and the classism. So, you know, this racism and classism is not exempt from anyone, and we need to speak about it more.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have to have those uncomfortable conversations. That's what we need to have. We need to study the history, the culture. We have to change our diets as well, because a lot of the stuff that we ate, we're eating now, are the stuff that the slave masters would just give us, the scraps. So even the diet needs to be changed.
So, is there a black diet? I mean, what would you recommend?
Yes. I started researching. Yes, there is a black diet. I started reading this book, African Holistic Health, Lalia O Africa. And I started reading it, and a lot of the stuff that we're taking or advice that we're getting, it's not specifically for black people or African people. I've been studying all this stuff, like, even before this pandemic, I was reading a lot, too. You just need to get it in touch with your roots, most important.
Because I have heard of what tofu, and you know it doesn't sound that appetizing to me. So I am still struggling with it, you know. And I've spoken to people who have gone to Africa and they talk about the food and it is that
something
that
you're talking about food, right?
So probably you can educate me. I wish to be on this African food.
You're talking about fufu, yes. Two of my best friends, they're from Ghana. So I grew up with them, and I was always eating their traditional food. So fufu, I believe it's like something to do with cornmeal, or cassava. It's cassava. I didn't find it really had a taste. You usually eat it with a pepper stew, like a tomato paste. It's like a stew. It has peppers in it. You can eat it with fish. I've eaten it. It tastes good. You don't have any African friends? Abelian? Do you?
I have a brother who went to Africa, you know, and man, he does not bring back such a wonderful report on the food. The African, they are thirsty for the God, man. They love to worship and things like that. But also I heard in Africa, they mostly eat with their hands. The knife and fork thing is a slave. You're right, it's a slave master. so, but I don't know if I would be comfortable eating with my hands. What about you, Dr. Arn?
Well, you know, you use the term, you know, indoctrination. And when you're indoctrinated, it means that somebody else's culture is imposed upon another group. And, you know, like say, for example, you talk about, Monica is talking about the food that one should eat. You can look at nothing. A human being, teeth, and see that we are not meant to eat meat. Our teeth are designed to crush grains and corns and stuff like that. Which, anytime a person is going through a health crisis, the first thing they do is to change their diet. And they change the diet by eating foods that are easily digested, corns and grains and vegetables and fruits. This is something that, and if you look at it this way too, Dr. Cameron, that as slaves, we don't. And this is why you find the pig and the pig foot and all of those things, because these are the things that they did not want. So they took to us, and we, as black people, creative people, we found ways to make it nice. So we would put a lot of salt on it and season on it, and then we would cook it. And this is why, just culturally, we now started to eat these things as a part of our diet. Now, if you look at human beings and see how these diseases affect us, it first attacks your digestive system. The other forms of food and drink alcohol and all those things, it's hard for the digestion to take place and for to assimilate and becomes you. So if you have to know that we drink, we are alcohol for the most part, celebrate once a year on the plantation. Once a year, the slave master would give black people a certain freedom where they didn't have to work. So they would take that freedom to drink and party and have fun. And you see that we still do it today. So many of the things that we are doing today, Dr. Cameron, it was things that were taught. And if you look back into Booker T. Washington, you saw where he wanted to bring some of this culture that was imposed upon us by the slave masters. It's a hard thing to do because now as we get older, we believe that this is who we are. But again, you use the term indoctrinated. That's a very dangerous and cruel word because if it's not being used to elevate one's consciousness, then it is something that is taking away your humanity and it is taking away your connection to God. It's taking away your connection to family. And this is why you see that many of us, we don't even care much about building a family. I believe that the family is the foundation. And if we can come back and find ourselves and start to think about family and family values and family morals, then we will never have the strength and the courage to overcome racism and root it out wherever it lies.
Yeah, because even and Manny can testify to this too. Like in Canada, there is this big Chinese place, what the name, Mandarin, where you can go and pay like what, $5, and you have all the Chinese food that you want. Isn't that so, Manny?
You said $5. Yeah. Sorry, do you want to elaborate on Mandarin?
Right. So I am saying like the Chinese, they are preserving their culture. I am saying,
yeah.
do you have like an African place in Canada? I know that most people, you know, they want to live like in Thornhill and all those places where you hardly find any black. I am saying, do the black not come of age and they're coming into their own, they're creating their own community, they're creating their own economic space? Are we in business? Are we studying our history? What changes have you seen in Canada that you can even highlight or so that we can think about it?
I find in Canada, like we do own businesses, we do. I guess we're getting unified, I find. To say as a whole, we don't have our own community in one specific place. We are kind of scattered, I find. There's a lot of black people that live in Brampton. Like, we live in different areas. It's not to say that we have, like, one specific area. Like, the Jewish people, they have Bathurst. I guess the Jamaicans used to have Eglinton, but now there's a lot of gentrification happening on Eglinton Avenue West. They're doing a lot of construction for the Metrolink that's coming in. And I find that community is being lost. Like, a lot of the stores are closed down. If you do go down there, I find that we don't have a specific place. So I guess going forward with my generation and the generation below us, Generation Y, I guess they're called, or Generation X, I think they're called, the next generation after the millennials, since I'm a part of the millennials, I feel that we need to try to make the difference. We need to make the change. And then I'm finding that a lot of people, they're making Instagram groups or they're using social media to make people more aware of the issues and things that we are trying to make a change with. So I find that it is happening, but it is happening slowly.
Right. And even in Canada, as you mentioned, like Eglinton and all those places. But what about an economic hub? Because I know in Canada you have a place they call Jew Town. Canada have their own Chinatown. I mean,
yeah.
Everything goes back to Eglinton. That's what I'm saying. Do you see any new community around? What about Mississauga and Brampton and all those places?
Well, we have Jane and Finch as well. Like, I guess there's little hubs of people, but I feel like we need to be more united. Like, I know now a lot of people are promoting support black businesses, go to black people businesses, because we want our money to be within our economics, within our society, since we spend the most as consumers, but we need to be more owners and be consumers. And I find that we need to have more business. We do have businesses, but I feel like we need to be more united. In some way, I feel like we haven't reached that goal of like 100% unity.
But it at
least getting there. Like, it is getting there.
Right.
Slowly,
and as you said,
surely it will happen.
There is a lady in Canada that is rising up. Her name is Leslyn Lewis. Now, she's a black woman, and she's going for the leadership of the Conservative Party. And how could people get to know about, because all through the years, Canada, I've never seen a black, you know, person in that top tier. Yes. No, she's a black woman. She's a Jamaican. She's not a Canadian. She was born in Jamaica, so she might be a naturalized Canadian by now. What can be done? What is the buzz around this woman by the name of Leslie Lewis?
Is she in Toronto, Uncle Ann?
Yes, she's running for the Conservative leadership of the Conservative Party. And she's a Canadian lawyer, and she's living in Toronto.
Okay.
Dr. Leslie Lewis, and she's now running for the leadership of the Conservative Party, and she's a black woman, you know, and you know, people are already, she's, you know, being looked down on, but she's fighting back, because as she said, she's a trained lawyer, and you know, she's running for the leadership of the Conservative this
party. Yeah, I was just looking her up online. I'm not really familiar with her. Like, I know about Jean Hostein. That was a big politician. She still is in Toronto. She started Black History in Toronto. I met her this year in February. I went to a Mosaic Rogers event, and she was there. She was one of the guest speakers.
But for changes to be made in Canada, though, money, people of color would have to get more organized, get more vocal, be more visible. How can all of that be done in Canada? Do you see like a group that is energizing towards that cause, or everybody is just laid back and comfortable? You know, me in my little small corner, and what can be done?
No, I find that a lot of people, they are protesting and letting people know about the issues that are happening. But we can only do it by ourselves, right? We need other allies around us as well as helping us with this. It can't only be us standing by ourselves, right? We need other allies from different cultures to also help us in this. Because racism goes across the board. We're not the only people that have racism. All cultures have racism. And have experienced that.
Well, when we look at racism, though, we sometimes people don't fully understand that racism is something where one group would leverage the power and the resources. Where racism is not just say, for example, stopping a person and giving them a ticket, but it is using the system to don't press another group. Like, say, for example, the justice system. There's a very important documentary that they call The 13th. It's on Netflix, where they were showing you how you move slaves from the plantation, and then you found a way to criminalize them so that you could get them into the jail system where they now could work for free. Very interesting documentary that I would recommend that people watch. So when you look at the justice system and you see why it is important to imprison people, then you will see it different. Why a black person may not get justice in a court of law, because it benefits the state when that person is able to work for free inside the prison. And you will see it, indoctrination also comes in education. What is in the curriculum? Just like we're talking now about black history and the fact that the curriculum is not packed with black activists who have fought for you, for me. You know, these are the info, because it's, you can empower people with information which turns into knowledge. So racism is not just one group against another. It's one group using the resources, the knowledge, the leverage to enforce a particular outcome. Because people may say, we as African descent, that we can be racist, but we are not using a system to deny a person from getting a bank loan. We're not using a system to make sure that when we finish our education, we are back into corporate America working, not owning our own. racism, you know, so it goes, it's a huge thing. And until we start to look at the different strategies that are being used to exploit people of African descent, that is the only way we will understand why some of us are not able to excel beyond our highest potential.
When you look at the system, the world system, black people really, we have excelled in sports and entertainment and the arts and stuff. But economically, because when you look at, you know, some of the richest men in the world, the black man is far, far, far. You look at a Warren Buffett who has billions of dollars to his name, and Bill Gates and all those men. So economically, we are not empowered, and I think that is one of the way that, you know, we are laid in the balance and we found wanting. Now, how can we get up to that stage where we command economic power? Are we garner more wealth for, you know, not just us, all of our people? And that is all we need to see to work, because probably that could be one of the problems. We need to look at this thing holistically and just not just, you know, just focus on Canada, but we want to probably just focus on worldwide and see how we can help do something that is universal that can help our people.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, it is in every aspect of life. If you go back even to sports, I mean, racism was always there and things like that. And we see where the white people are still being privileged. I was listening to this guy that do the diving in England. What's his name? Wisdom Knight or whatever his name. And he said he was subject to racism because of the way he has done his hair. And you know that we as black people, we love our afros, we love our hair being tall, we feel comfortable with that. So it is everywhere we are in life. Look at even former President Obama. Remember that they said it was the same. Donald Trump said that he was not born in America. He might have to provide his birth certificate to show that he was born in America. So every aspect of life, you know, our people have been targeted and look how it has manifested. We see here Martin Luther, he was assassinated in 1968 because he has done so much for black people in America. He was the one who was influential in getting the Civil Rights Bill to pass. And if you go back into history, President John F. Kennedy was killed because of that civil rights thing. Martin Luther lost his life. Malcolm X lost his life. And if you go way back into the 1860s, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated because he signed that Emancipation Proclamation. So we see where our people are being targeted for you know, just trying to be ourselves. They don't want us to be ourselves. And when we have made such a significant contribution to this world, they don't want us. They just want us to fuss and fight. Yes, man, you can go ahead and put in your input, you know. Because there's really so much, you know, that our people has contributed. And this is one of the things that our history is lacking. I'm gonna show you an example and then I'm gonna hold on. Ben Carson is a Republican. And he's supporting Donald Trump. And last week he spoke something degrading about Barack Obama. No, if Ben Carson has known the history of America and the history of the Republican Party, he would be saying something different. Because it was the Republican Party that declared America a white state. They have nothing to do with blacks. They just see blacks as slaves. And to be honest, that's the same thing President Donald Trump is showing right now. He think nothing good of black people. He just want to use them. He has no regard for African. I mean, wasn't he saying those countries are refer to them as shithole countries? That's how Donald Trump see African people of African descent. You hear what he said about Haiti and the people who are demonstrating in America? He called them rioters and looters and thugs and all sort of stuff. And our people are still being treated with injustice in America. 50 years after they assassinated Martin Luther.
Well, let me say this, Dr. Cameron, because it is very important that whosoever on the line, whether you are male, female, mother, father, auntie, uncle, that it starts with you. You must take the time to invest in your kids. One of the hardest things for me to be a father is that I have to spend quality time debunking a lot of the things out there. They used to say if you want to hide something from a black man, you put it in a book. Because they knew that because we were denied the ability to read, that we had no desire to want to read even when the opportunity presented itself. And it starts with us. Whether you're in Canada, Jamaica, and so on and so forth, you need to sit and teach them. The scripture said it best enough. When them wake up, you teach them. When they go out, you teach them. When them come in, you teach them. When they lie down, you teach them. When they wake up, you teach them. Some of us are, as parents, we want the results, but we're not willing to put in the work. And this is where mentoring comes in, because if you're not willing to do it, then you must get somebody else who can pass on that lived experience and get them to see what we're up against. Because the only way we're going to reverse the process that has started hundreds of years ago is when we are committed as a parent, our parents, to sit down, teach your kids the history, because the school is not going to teach them. So who do you expect will teach them? You have to do it. And a part of being a parent is just that. In India, it tells that the father, when he comes home, if he has three kids, he's going to spend a minimum hour and a half with each child. How much hours do we spend with our kids? How many times do we interact with them and teach them the way of life? We expect the church alone and the school alone to teach our kids. It is your duty as a parent to do that. It is. You see, recently they had a movie out with that same guy, Ben Carson. And when I saw that movie, I was very impressed, because I thought this man was a man who was for his people. But look at the man now. It is for us to, as black people, to come together and debunk those movies and make sure that we teach your kids by giving them real life lessons. The time is now. If things must change, you must change. And as I said before, if you as a parent go out there, have kids, and you're not willing to invest time and effort in them, why have them? You know, back in the days, Dr. Cameron, a slave, they would deliberately separate the father from the son and the daughter from the mother, and they would put them miles away. It was intentional. No, we don't have that level of slavery, but you still have fathers who are not taking full responsibility for the thing that he put in motion. And you have mothers who are not doing that. Did you know they say that Jamaica is the most hugless society? Parents are not hugging their kids and telling them how much they love them and tell them how good they are and tell them that they believe in them. When I do seminars, the biggest obstacles that I face is for them to tell you that the home is where they are fighting to leave, because parents are the first person who break their spirit. For their things to change, we must change.
So the parents are supposed to be the first role model.
So as parents, we have to get it together, man. It starts too by picking the right spouse. Most of the time, we invest in the wrong person.
And then when it don't go right, the kids caught in the middle, they didn't ask for this. So I'm saying that the male must find a woman, not because she's attractive on the outside and ugly on the inside. Find a person who is beautiful on the inside. And then you invest in a family. But you can't build a house or a family with a person who don't have the qualities. We must, Dr. Karen, I sit with my daughters and I explain to them about husband they need to find. And don't let guys tell them things that just sounds good. Look at the history. Back in the days in Africa, we used to go by the community and we used to go by reputation in that community. If your parents had a bad reputation, you would never find a good wife from that community. And now we are taking these things for granted. We have to go back to the old, the African roots, where if we have to make arranged marriages to make sure that son is marrying the right person or your daughter is marrying the right person, it's something that we should think about. But you have people getting together and after 6 months, a baby is on the way and they're ready to get a divorce. Everything is upside down, Dr. Cameron, and we need to sit together. We need to discuss these things in advance. We can't wait until we're in it. Then we're trying to figure out how to get out of it. We need to think about it before we get into it.
Okay. So you're saying that there needs to be relationship goals, basically. Relationship goals. Basically, you're saying that people should... their main focus should be their children. If they have children, their main focus should be their offspring, because that's going to be their legacy, right?
In order for each generation to be better,
right?
We as the parents know must spend the time to invest. And it starts by having the right person. If you have a person with values, then chances are that person will carry or teach the child these values. We need an army of families who understand what we are up against, because when we look at each generation, I've been around the schools and I do seminars and workshops, and what I see is that in Jamaica, for example, Dr. Cameron, you have people who are proud to be fully dunce. Back in my time, if a person utter something like that out of his or her mouth, they would be banished. But now you have people who are proud to be fully dunce. Think about it.
Fully done?
It's a Jamaican term to mean that they don't have any sense. And they...
Oh, okay.
That's another story. So they say they are fully done. But it just shows you where, as a nation, as a people, how far we have regressed. And in order for us to get ourselves out of this predicament, we have to bring the family together and start to teach the values. Because, and why it's like that? Because the scripture said that children shall have children. You have grandmothers who are 30 years old.
The hour is up. The clock is up. We got to go. We give God praise for his blessing. And
God, we give the glory, Dr. Cameron.
Next week, same time, and these things have to come out, man. We have to tell them. We have to tell them because listen to me. God's word cannot fade away. Isaiah said, "The grass withereth and the flower faded, but the word of God shall stand forever." God bless you. We're gonna be back here next week again on the Clarendon Connection, and we thank all those who are listening and we receive your texts and just continue to spread the word about the Clarendon Connection. God bless you. Over to you, studio.